Iowa's plants may be dormant right now, but that doesn't mean there's nothing growing in the state. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will be here, along with Aaron Stile, Program Manager for Ryman Gardens in Ames. We'll talk about growing and caring for orchids. On February 7th and 8th, Ryman Gardens will be celebrating its annual Orchid Fest and unveiling a new display featuring hundreds of colorful blossoms. And of course, Aaron and Richard will answer your questions today about orchids and the other plants in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and today we're going to talk about orchids. They're beautiful, fragile, and extremely popular. For a novice, they can be a little bit intimidating. This hour, we'll talk about how to take care of orchids, and of course, we will answer your questions. With me today, horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And Aaron Stile, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Hello.
And the inspiration for this conversation is that the annual Orchid Fest is coming up at Ryman Gardens. It's coming up on February 7th and 8th, and you're also working on an extraordinary orchid display, right?
Yeah, we have a big orchid display planned. It's actually just got put in, so if you visited this weekend, you would see it too. But we're really excited to have the conservatory full of orchids for our, what I think is our sixth annual Orchid Fest now.
Wonderful. Well, let's talk about orchids. They're something that, you know, people love to cultivate. They're often given as gifts. You see them in a lot of flower shops. Mm-hmm. How many different kinds of orchids are there?
Oh, there are hundreds of different kinds. But the ones that we grow primarily indoors as flowering houseplants are actually only a handful that you see very commonly. And of course, the one that's at the top of that list is the moth orchid or the Phalaenopsis, because it really is one of the easiest ones for people to grow in their homes. It also, when it blooms for a really long time. So that makes it very desirable too, because you could have flowers for 4 months sometimes with some of those moth orchids.
With the orchids that we see at stores, a lot of them aren't necessarily, they don't necessarily even give the name of the kind of orchid. Can we just assume that they're moth orchids?
Yeah, well, you know, usually the ones that you see, they have a very distinctive flower, and usually it'll say at least like Phalaenopsis, or they'll abbreviate it to PHAL. Or there'll be a little tag in there somewhere that says moth orchid or something like that. But if you get a plant that has about 4 or 5 leathery leaves, kind of in a rosette, and then this big tall spike, usually arched with a flower on it, with a couple really large petals and a few smaller petals that, if you squint your eyes, look a little bit like a moth, you have a moth orchid.
Now, something that we also see in flower shops quite a lot are blue orchids.
Yeah, those are interesting. You know, there's in the gardener world, and especially in the orchid world, there's a great divide on this. There's a lot of, I'll call them purists, who really don't like the idea of this because they are dyed blue. They are.
Right, there's no natural
blue. No, and when you
orchids.
See this color, it's not a natural blue.
It's striking.
It is very striking. They are very interesting plants, but they're dyed. If you look at them, there's a special process that they use to take just a regular white orchid, and they inject the stem with a blue dye, and then as the flowers open, they are colored with that dye in that blue hue. It's really interesting. It's really intriguing. It is fun. But if you do keep that orchid and you try to get it to bloom again, which is definitely possible, it won't bloom blue again. It will be white. Yeah.
When you receive an orchid or buy an orchid, and often when you buy them, they are already in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
How long do those blooms last?
For the phalaenopsis, which is by far the most common that you see in the grocery stores and around in stores, most of those should stay in bloom for 2 to 3 months, maybe as long as four. Anything less than 6 weeks would probably be disappointing. I mean, they tend to stay in bloom for quite a while. You want to make sure that you keep them. One of the hardest things about orchids is the watering. Because you don't water them the same way as you do houseplants. They're not growing in soil. They're usually growing in a bark or some kind of peat moss that dries out more quickly, but they want to dry out. They don't grow in soil in their native habitats. So you want to make sure that you're watering frequently, but they're never sitting in water, and that the plants are allowed to dry out just dry out and never completely dry out, and then watering in between. There's kind of that's I think what most people have the hardest time with in growing orchids at home is figuring out how to water them.
So everybody wants a formula for that.
I know there is no there's no formula for watering.
Water them every 3 days.
No, and I will say that if you go online, you'll come across people who say put ice cubes on them and stuff like that, and that's not a good idea. Again, these plants in their native habitats grow epiphytically. They grow on top of other plants, so they're never in soil. We put them in bark or something like that to help support them, but they want to be wet but never sitting in water. They want to dry out well between waterings but never completely dry out. It's a real Goldilocks kind of situation here. So
where are the native habitats of orchids?
Most of it, at least I'm talking about Phalaenopsis now. There are orchids everywhere. I mean, the state flower of Minnesota is an orchid. But the ones that we're talking about, the tropical types that you see in the stores this time of year in particular, most of those are native to tropical Central and South America or tropical Asia.
Now, you mentioned ice cubes. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of lore that surrounds the care of orchids.
Yeah.
Why all the mystique? I mean, it's tough to know when to water them, but how did this sort of a mythology grow around
them?
That's
a good question, Charity. I don't know for sure. I think part of it is because it's slightly different than our typical house plant. And so anything that gets thrown out there, people want to try because they know that it's not the same as what they maybe would do for a philodendron or an African violet even. And so I think maybe that's what contributes some to it. I think, orchids, I think now more than ever are available, relatively inexpensive for the average homeowner. And so now more and more people actually have access to these plants and can have them at home. And so they're looking for tips and advice. The best tips and advice you can give is, at least for the moth orchid, because it's a pretty diverse group of plants, but the ones that you'd find most often in your house, nice bright window, the same kind of window that an African violet would love, a Phalaenopsis orchid or a moth orchid would love.
And I've seen a lot of people with African violets use a lot of artificial light because windows aren't that bright sometimes.
Right.
Is that good for orchids too?
Yeah, there's a lot of folks who very successfully grow orchids under artificial light. And you would use it in a very similar way that you do with things like African violets.
What about temperature? And that's another big issue. When you put something close to a window, you may be getting enough light, but it can also be very cold there.
Yeah. Well, most orchids, and I keep coming back to the moth orchid because it is probably the easiest one to take care of in your home. And one of the reasons why is because the moth orchid actually really likes the temperatures that we like indoors. So most of them are going to be happy between 50 and 60 degrees, especially at night, and maybe a little bit warmer during the day. But what we keep our homes at are about what the moth orchid is really happy with. So that makes it work well. And most orchids actually appreciate a little dip in temperature at night compared to the day. So being near a window, not right next to it, isn't necessarily a bad thing.
In the wintertime, would there be enough light during the day?
Some folks who are really serious about this stuff may move them to artificial light during the winter. They may put them in a different window, like a south-facing window in the wintertime and an east-facing window in the summertime. There's a lot of folks who have great success doing what I like to call the summer vacation for their orchids. So they go outside in a full shade location outside. The orchids love it in the summer, and then they bring them into the brightest spot they can find in their house for the winter.
How many times a year can an orchid bloom?
Oh, most of them bloom just once.
Okay.
But because they're in bloom for so long, you can really appreciate it for a long time. And most of them, if you get, you know, different species will bloom at different times of year, but there are a lot of them, especially the Phalaenopsis, that naturally bloom around this time of year, which is why this is when we have our Orchid Fest. And this is
when we really need colors
and
blossoms and some sort of sign that something could grow somewhere. You talked about the medium that they're potted in.
Yeah.
What about fertilization? Is that something you need to think about?
You know, most orchids will do okay if you don't fertilize very often, but if you do want to have a nice, strong growing plant that's more likely to rebloom for you, fertilizing like every other time or once a month when you water with half-strength liquid fertilizer works really well.
Okay. And what about repotting them?
Yeah, this is one of those things that differs a lot from our typical house plants. They grow in a really coarse bark. Sometimes you'll find them in the store in a sphagnum moss because they know people tend to not water them very well, and the moss does well for the average homeowner. But if you go to the store, you'll find a bag of orchid bark. You need to repot your orchid about every 3 years. It really likes to refresh that growing media it's in. And when you do that, it helps the roots stay healthy. But you don't necessarily have to move it up to a larger pot. It just wants a refresh of that potting media. So if it's not any bigger, you don't need to put it in a larger container. You just need to replace that bark mixture.
And if you're selecting a pot, you talked about how they would like to dry out. Do you need to make sure it's something with really good drainage?
Well, yes, ideally. But if you are like me and you're a card-holding member of the Underwaterer Society, using a plastic pot may be a good idea because that plant will stay a little wetter a little longer. Most of us tend to overwater orchids, so putting them in a clay pot, which will dry out faster than a plastic pot, putting them in a special orchid pot, which usually has a lot of openings along the side to help with air circulation and to help the media dry out a little faster, is a good idea. You can even mount them to boards. You can put them in open wire baskets. There's a lot of options there.
So your orchid display at Ryman Gardens is put together. Is it already open to the public or this weekend? Okay.
It is open. You can come and see us. It'll be there all the way through April, but in a couple of weekends, we'll have our Orchid Fest where we have vendors come in and sell orchids. We'll have the Iowa Orchid Society staffing a question and answer booth. And these are great people who spent a lot of their free time growing orchids and have a lot of great advice. We have some classes. One of them's on repotting orchids. And just in general, it'll be a bright, colorful,
warm
environment in the middle of February. Yeah,
that's February 7th and 8th, right?
Yes,
and how many different kinds of orchids do you have in your display?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. There are probably at least 50 or 60 different varieties.
All right, nice. I'm talking with Aaron Style, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens in Ames. Horticulturist Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension is here. They are both here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Orchid questions are great, but any of the plants in your life are fair game. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about orchids so far, but you can join us with any questions that you have. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. With me today, Aaron Style, Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens in Ames, and horticulturist Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension. We're going to start with a chicken poop question.
Okay.
All right. This one's from Christy in Southwest Wisconsin. She says, I'm wondering about the best way to share some of our natural country fertilizers with my daughter, who's an urban gardener living several hours away. I can scrape the manure from my chicken roosts into 5-gallon buckets and transport them to her pretty easily. This will be pure manure, no hay, straw, etc. What's the best way for her to use this product once she receives it?
I would apply it very uniformly, fairly lightly, and definitely work it into the soil, work it in, and go with that.
All right. And how long before growing something in the soil? Is there a concern if you're growing vegetables in the soil about contamination?
There might be with things like, let's say, for example, leafy greens like lettuce and spinach in the spring. But as far as things like tomatoes and peppers, that probably shouldn't be a problem, because by then, any harmful bacteria should have basically been broken down or destroyed.
All right. And any tips for transporting it odorlessly?
Oh, a truck and putting it in the back.
All right. Let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100. Annie is on the line in Ames. Hi, Annie.
Yeah, hi. I had a question about apple trees. I was going to plant some with M7 rootstock, and the area I want to plant them in has 3 feet deep tile lines. I didn't know if the roots would get into the tile lines or not.
Well, most tree roots are basically found in the upper, let's say, 12 inches of soil. They actually don't go very deeply. And that's because that's where the nutrients are, in the topsoil. And the roots also need to breathe. And there's a little bit of oxygen in the pore spaces between the soil particles in the upper few inches of soil. So the tree roots typically just don't go that deep. There's no need for them to do so. So I don't think that should be a big problem.
Okay, cool.
I would think, especially with a smaller tree like that, too.
All right, Annie.
All right.
Thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks for letting me know.
866-780-9100. We do have a couple of orchid questions on the line. This is from Alex in West Des Moines. Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, so I have what I've been told is a bamboo orchid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's blooming right now, and I actually have two questions. The first question is, how to divide it, and the second question is how to successfully transplant offspring off of it. The situation I have is that it has kind of outgrown its pot. It has a ton of aerial roots kind of flying everywhere, and it has 3 flowering shoots right now.
Okay.
So I didn't know if it was a good idea to divide it while it's blooming or not, and then also it has another shoot that has like a little offspring that has its own set of aerial roots, and I wanted to be able to cut that up and pot that somewhere else, but I wasn't sure what the best way was to do that.
Well, yeah, the bamboo orchid, or some folks will call them dendrobium orchid, is, it sounds like it's really healthy. You're doing a good job. I would wait to do any division until it's done flowering. It'll put a lot of stress on the plant. It'll likely shorten the flower life if you try to do the division while it's blooming. So you might as well enjoy the flowers while they're there, wait for it to finish. And then in terms of division, you're going to divide it like you would really any other plant. You're going to find a natural spot where it can break apart, where you can have some both upper and lower roots and shoots, and then simply pot it up in new bark media. It sounds like you have a nice, large, healthy plant, so finding a spot where it can kind of break or tease apart, you may use a knife or something to kind of break little pieces, but it likely has, if I am picturing this right, it probably has several shoots that are very separated all the way down to the base, so you'd be able to separate them at that spot on the plant and then pot them up. But I would wait till it's finished flowering.
Okay, and for the shoot that has the little offspring, can I just cut that off, or is that okay to do?
If it has both shoots and roots, then yeah, that should be no problem. And, you know, giving it about half-strength fertilizer every other time that it waters will also help it tremendously recover from the division.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Alex, thanks a lot for your call, and we'll go to another orchid question now. Jan is on the line in Adair. Hi, Jan.
Hi, good morning. I have 5 orchids, and they range from, well, I tend to inherit them from people that they don't do well for, and so they've given them to me. Not that I'm any expert, but they all have aerial roots, and I've replanted some of them, repotted them, and within weeks they have aerial roots again, and they wonder if I'm doing something wrong.
No, not at all. That is how they grow. If you have nice green or white plump roots, you're doing a great job. That plant is nice and happy. That's exactly what you'd like to see. In the wild, those roots would be what the plant uses to hold on to a branch or to hold on to the trunk in some spot. But in your container, it's just going to be used to help support it within that bark mixture that it's growing in.
Okay. Now, I repotted them, and then I tried to get them all into the bark. Mm-hmm. I wasn't real successful at, but... I try to repot them about every 2 to 3 years.
That's perfect. Yep.
Okay. And I have to admit, I have never fertilized them.
You know, and some people don't, and you don't necessarily have to. They do typically grow faster. They probably bloom better with fertilizer.
They typically have about a dozen blossoms.
Oh, yeah. So you're doing okay. And I think the fact that you're replacing the bark mixture on a regular basis helps quite a bit too. Most gardeners forget to do that part.
Okay. Well, some came in moss and some came in bark.
Yep.
So the ones that came in moss, I replaced with moss. And the ones that came in bark, I replaced with bark.
And that's fine. Most folks have better success picking one or the other because then you can kind of treat them all the same. But I don't know. It sounds like you're doing a pretty good job. So maybe you can just keep up what you're doing.
Well, every once so often, you know, they're really ugly. But
yeah.
the leaves and the roots are ugly, but the blossoms, then every time I think, I'm going to get rid of these things, then they begin to bloom again, and then I fall back in love with them.
Yeah, I know.
So, and now 4 of the 5 have sent up shoots that I'm training in.
Well, it sounds like you got the perfect spot for these plants.
Well, they're in a south window, but mm-hmm. about 3 to 4, 3 foot away from the window, and the house has an overhang, so they never get direct light.
Yep.
But it's very bright.
That's perfect.
And they seem to like it. Mm. And I have them double potted. So then I water them, and then I pour out all the extra water that drains through.
Yeah, and that's a good strategy.
Okay.
Well, Jan, maybe you should make it up to Orchid Fest in a couple of weeks. Maybe
it sounds like
you could teach a class,
though.
You're doing great.
That because I know I would just want to bring more home.
Yeah, well, you'll have a chance to if you stop by.
All right, Jan, thank you so much for your call. We'll take a short break from Orchid Questions, and then we'll get back to a couple of more in a moment. You can join with your questions on orchids or other plants, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have another poop question, so that's good news. This one's from Anne in DeSoto. She says, I have a barn with bats. I've been saving the guano, and I know it needs to be seasoned for quite a while before using it in the garden, but I can't find out how long to season it or how much can be used. Can you help?
Well, as far as seasoning, I think the key there would be not that so much as the amount, as far as that bat guano is concentrated. And if you apply too much, it's going to burn plants. So if you use the material, it has to be applied very lightly. That's the key point there.
So it's known as one of the most powerful fertilizers in the world. So seasoning is not necessarily as important as just a very light hand?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Small amount.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Ralph is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, there are 3 questions. What's the best new variety of tomatoes to plant this year? Second question, were there many Japanese beetles around last year, and will they be bad in the Paoshikawa County area? I didn't see hardly any last year. And my stone fruit did not produce much of anything. The little purple bohemian plums were where there were none, and I don't know whether that was because of poor pollination or whatever. Now, hopefully you can remember everything I said.
All right, I wrote them down. So let's start with new tomatoes. Is there buzz about a new kind of tomato that people are excited about, Richard?
Well, you might. There's a couple of new All-America selections you might try. There's one called Chef's Pink Choice and Chef's Pink Orange. You might want to try those. Those are newer varieties. You might want to try those. They are, I believe, indeterminate, meaning they grow quite tall. But you might want to try those. As far as the tree fruits, I think many tree fruits didn't produce very well last year because they did the previous year where they bore very heavily.
Right, it was a bumper crop the year before.
Right, so this year they kind of rested, and hopefully this year they'll produce quite well.
All right, and of course we didn't have very many Japanese beetles across most of the state last year, and a lot of people think that was the polar vortex working for us last year.
Right, there is two things going on there as far as what the entomologists say. Is that we had a very dry summer, and so the eggs that hatched, many of those may have simply died because the environment was so dry. And then we had a very cold winter, and the soil temperatures got extremely cold because the ground was dry, and those extremely cold temperatures probably destroyed some of the insects too. So last year we had very few. In most of Iowa, except northeast Iowa, had more than the rest of the state.
And of course, last summer we had more moisture. We're having a milder winter, so we could see a little higher population this
year. Right, right. So the thinking is that there should be more this year, but it shouldn't be a huge jump. It's going to take a while for them to kind of build back up as far as
it's
the population.
Nice to get a little respite,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it was.
All right, Ralph, thanks for your call. And since Ralph is bringing up the question of tomatoes, a lot of people start to get itchy this time of year thinking, when can I start my seeds? So help us plan a little bit. Not yet.
Right. Well, with tomatoes, they grow very quickly. And so you typically want to start those inside maybe 6 weeks before you plan to plant them outside. So way too early on that. Now, some things like some of the flowers, like geraniums, they have a long, what we call crop time indoors, where they grow very slowly. So with something like geraniums, you would start inside basically maybe early February.
Okay.
Because they take so long to grow, by May you'll have a nice plant. But some things like tomatoes, they grow so quickly, you don't want to have this gigantic, lanky thing. You want something nice and stocky. So,
all right, so 6 weeks before Mother's Day, right?
Yes.
Okay. Jim is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I had a question taking us outdoors for a little bit, please. For the last week or so, I've had my tulips coming up. Should that be an area of real concern?
Not
west.
Yeah, not actually. Typically that occurs where you have tulips, let's say, close to the house foundation on the south or west side, and those areas warm up very quickly in the spring. And it's not uncommon to see those typically in February in those locations. Out in the open, they typically don't come up because the ground stays quite cold. So what I would do is if we get some snow in the next few days or whatever, I would basically take some of that snow, maybe cover them up nice and deeply, and just let them rest underneath the snow.
All right. Well, and otherwise, we don't have to put any more mulch or anything else on them.
No, you could put some straw on them if you want to, but that's basically what's happening is the ground is warming up prematurely in those areas, but they can actually handle cold temperatures pretty nicely, pretty easily.
Okay.
And it's a sign of spring, Jim.
That sounds good.
We're going to make it, right?
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. Josh is on the line in Charles City. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
What's your question?
I had a really beautiful rubber tree plant, probably 4 foot tall. But it stays outside all summer long. And this fall, once it was starting to get cold, I didn't have time to bring it in the house, but what I did was I brought it in the garage. And the garage is insulated, but it's not heated. And it didn't get below freezing, but all the leaves curled up and fell off. Did I kill the plant, or will it eventually come back?
I think you need to bring it inside.
It's been inside ever since the leaves curled up.
Okay.
I kind of got scared and I brought it inside, but I've been continuing to water it. I haven't seen any leaf action yet, but I was just kind of curious.
So it's been inside how long, would you say?
Oh, it's been inside since the end of October.
Okay.
Is the stem still green?
Yes, it is. And it's still flexible. It's not brittle.
I would give it basically till the end of March.
Okay.
If you don't see any new leaves coming out by the end of March, I would assume it has died.
Okay.
Because with the longer days, with the growing environment getting better over the next few weeks indoors, that should coax it to go ahead and leaf out. And if you see nothing by the end of March, I would suspect it's dead.
Okay.
I would also maybe look at the base of the plant to see if there might be some sprouts at the base.
Okay.
I could see where maybe parts of the plant have died. So some of the outer portions may have died, but maybe the bottom portion is still alive. So look for signs of life. And if you don't see anything by the end of March, I would assume it's dead. Okay. What you might want to do also maybe is to give it some dilute fertilizer.
Okay.
Apply a dilute fertilizer solution to the plants and see if that may coax it to leaf out.
Okay. And should I cut those branches down to the dirt?
Nope. At this point, I would just leave it as it is, keep it watered, fertilized periodically, and see what it does.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, Josh, thanks a lot for your call. You can join us at 866-780-9100. I think I can squeeze in this question from Robin before the break. I have a phalaenopsis that bloomed for the past 3 months. Now it's done. Leaves seem healthy. Will it bloom again? And if so, when?
Yeah, there's two things with phalaenopsis in particular. Sometimes you can get it to bloom again right away by trimming the flower stalk back to the second little ring. Otherwise, it will take a year to rebloom.
All right. Aaron Stile, manager of public programs at Ryman Gardens, is here along with Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go back to the phones. Shalon is on the line in Williamsburg. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, I have a ficus tree. I think it's a ficus benjamina. I've had it for a few years. It stays indoors most of the time. And a couple years ago, it grew like almost a tumor on its trunk. And I was wondering if you had any insight as to what that is.
Well, not exactly. You will see some rather odd things on the trunks of trees on occasion. They're typically called a burl when you see it on a tree outdoors. I'm not sure exactly why those develop, but you'll see them on trees. It's a natural occurrence. It doesn't seem to affect their vigor or their health, but it is rather odd. And in fact, sometimes you'll see trees that are harvested that have these burls, and they're very valuable because they're quite different or unique. But I'm not sure exactly why they're forming on trees, per se.
Okay. All right. Well, then I will assume that that's what it is. We actually cut it off once, and it grew right back bigger.
The only other thing that I could think of would be crown gall, which is something that you see on some plants. I'm not sure if it occurs on ficus, but it's called by a bacterium. And you'll see this on certain plants like roses and some of the euonymus. And it's just this hard, knotty growth on the branch or the trunk. And it's called by a bacterium. There's not much you can do to kind of basically cure it. If you cut it off, it may reoccur. There's no treatment as far as a pesticide or fungicide. It's a bacterium. So you kind of basically live with it.
Right, and my ficus seems happy, so I was just curious.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Eldon is on the line in Atkins next. Hi, Eldon.
Good morning. I always enjoy your program.
Thanks. What's your question today?
And I find out who's listening to you by the number of comments I get. I'm wondering about a maple tree. I have a hard maple tree that's dying, and I put a replacement in close to it. But the replacement has 3 liters going up, which I'm going to remove. And I thought maybe it'd be better to remove it early in the in the late or midwinter than to wait until towards spring because of the bleeding from the maple.
Okay. Well, you can do it now, or you can do it basically as late as probably early April. But but my guess is, despite when you do it, it's still going to bleed this spring as soon as the sap starts to run. So you're still going to see that. It does not really harm the tree. That sap running out of the pruning cut, it kind of freaks out some people because they bleed for quite some time. It's quite a bit of sap that comes out, but it really has no great effect on the health of the tree. So don't worry about it, but you can do it now or basically as late as early April.
Now, I've heard of people using latex paint to brush onto the cut. Would that be of any benefit?
I would not try that. Just let it go naturally and bleed. Now, if you want to, if you wanted to get around bleeding at all, you could prune it basically in midsummer. If you wanted to, it would not bleed at that time of year. But I would be inclined to do it now because you never know when a storm might come up and maybe destroy part of the tree.
Okay, and a second question, if I may?
Quickly, Eldon.
Yes, to get your moth orchid to rebloom, did I understand it's two rings above the base?
Yeah, I didn't get a good chance to explain that really well, but on the flower stalk, there's often these little brown bands going up the stalk. Usually, if you prune it back to the second one, you'll get a new sprout or branch that comes out and will flower again. It will be smaller, it won't be as nicely shaped, but you'll get some more flowers. It doesn't always happen, but it's worth a try.
All right, Eldon, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that. We have another orchid question. This one's from Rick in Ames. He says, years ago, I rescued a vanilla plant from the back of Bessie Hall, and it has never done well. More accurately, it does okay for a while and then nearly dies with the leaves falling off and the stem getting necrotic. When that happens, I repot the plant, and so far it's come back, but I don't know what I'm doing wrong. My other orchids are fine.
You know, there's a couple things. I mean, the most common issue that people have with orchids is light. And so if this is happening with the season cycle, it may not be getting enough light in the winter time when our light levels are lower. Although saying that there's necrotic spots and things like that kind of point to potentially a watering issue. If you're watering too much, you could start getting root rot. Which would cause some damage. And then when he repots it, it probably helps it dry out quite a bit and it recovers from that. So I would really investigate the watering aspect of it first to see if you are watering appropriately, letting it dry out well between waterings, but not so much so that the plant starts to dry out.
And the fact that this is a rescued plant makes me wonder if someone else had gone through this cycle with it for
maybe they were just done with it before
throwing it out back.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't expect that. I think, and you know, watering changes throughout the year, too, because light changes throughout the year. So you may water more in the summer and less in the winter, or you may water more in the winter because the air is so dry and less in the summer because it's so humid. You have to be pretty flexible and evaluate each time you water to do it at the right time.
And you know what? I just realized that Rick is also on the phone. So, Rick, you said, he hung up. All right. I thought, wait, maybe there's more information that we should get from him. All right. I hope that answers your question, Rick. And let's go back to the phones, 866-780-9100. We've got a couple of lines open for you right now. Sue is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Sue.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I have a Christmas cactus that I've had for a couple of years. It is always dark green, wrinkly, and it's droopy all the time. I don't know if I'm watering it too much or not enough. It's in a south window. It never looks healthy, but it never dies.
Okay.
It did bloom in November this year, and it bloomed beautifully. But then after dirt bloomed, it went back to its droopy, dark green, wrinkly leaves. I don't know what to do. I hate to get rid of it.
What kind of pot is it in? Is it
it's
plastic?
It's a terracotta pot.
Okay. Does it have drainage holes in the bottom?
Yes.
Okay. When you water, does water flow out the bottom of the pot?
Sometimes. It did the last time, but it hasn't times before because I think sometimes, I shouldn't water it too much. And then other times it looks so droopy, I just think I've got to water it enough so it springs up a little bit.
Right. There's something obviously wrong with the environment. As far as watering, when you do water, always water thoroughly. You want to see water coming out the bottom of the pot so you know you've basically moistened the entire soil ball. And what you can do is get maybe a large plastic saucer, nice firm one, and put some pea gravel in the bottom of that saucer, and then place your pot on that. And then when you water, basically continue to water until you see water coming out the bottom. It can go into that saucer and stay there and evaporate around the plant. That's fine as long as the pot is above the water level. So you can do that every time when you water. That way, for example, you know you've moistened the entire soil ball. And also when you do that, you prevent the buildup of salts in your potting soil, which you can get on occasion. So do that. And typically I would say for most people, it should be a well-drained potting soil. And most people can water maybe every week or 10 days, and they'll be perfectly fine. And I would fertilize basically a little bit in the spring and summer, basically probably March through maybe August or September. And I would just use a very dilute fertilizer solution, bright light, but not direct sunlight. And that's basically all they need. So hopefully if the plant receives good, consistent care, hopefully the plant can kind of adjust and recover from the problem. If you feel the soil is extremely, let's say, it doesn't drain very well, you might consider repotting, but I would only do that at the last resort. They do like a well-drained potting soil. They don't like a potting soil that stays wet for a long period. They don't like that.
Okay, all right. And I guess when you talked about the kind of fertilizer, what kind of fertilizer would you suggest?
I would just use a water-soluble fertilizer like Miracle-Gro, which is very common.
Sure.
Just make a nice dilute solution, maybe do it once or twice a month.
All right, Sue, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got time for a couple more callers before the end of the hour. Dan is on the line in the Quad Cities. Hi, Dan.
Hello, good morning. I have two questions about our yard and garden. We're looking to plant some trees in our backyard. Pretty good drainage, lots of sun in the backyard. What trees would you recommend for our backyard in spring?
Well, are you looking for a large shade tree or a smaller tree like a crabapple?
I would say a larger shade tree, although we do have some power lines in the backyard, so maybe we do want to do something smaller.
Okay. If you have power lines nearby, then you probably don't want an oak tree or a maple tree just because they can get to be 40, 50 feet tall, and obviously that's not going to work. So if you have power lines nearby, then I would look for some of the smaller trees, things like crabapples, for example, a service berry, possibly a...
tree lilac would be nice.
Tree lilac, redbud. So basically smaller trees that typically might get to be maybe 20, 25 feet tall at maximum.
Okay, very good. One other question, if there's time. We have a small prairie garden. We let the prairie plants die out for the winter. They're perennial. Should we trim those back, try and do any seed harvesting, or just let it go in the spring?
You can cut them back if you wish. If their appearance is just not what you want, you can cut them back if you wish, but you can also just leave that debris as it is.
All right. And does he possibly need to think about mowing or clearing the area if they're fairly newly established?
Not really. It's up to the person. Do they really hate the appearance, or are they more natural as far as what they like?
Well, the reason I ask the question is often when you're establishing a prairie, you know, there are recommendations on burning, which you can't really do in your backyard.
Right, right.
But if you can't burn, we often hear the advice to mow for a while. But if they're established, it's not a big deal, right?
Right, right. We typically will mow maybe for the first year or two, and that's kind of to control the weeds that may come up in that area.
All right, Dan, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Brian is on the line in Winterset. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
I have a tree outdoors that's on the south side of my house, so it gets the southern exposure. I'm not sure what kind of tree it is, but it blooms and has a real nice smelling flower in the spring. Starts out with a green leaf and then turns to a maroon color later on in the spring and summer. So it's a really neat tree.
Oh, okay.
The problem I have is it's getting these growths on them, and I think mm-hmm. somebody told me it's a black knot.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how to, I mean, I try to remove them, but they keep coming back. So I
yeah.
just wondered if you had suggestions on that.
That is some type of flowering cherry, like a choke cherry, I believe. There are a number of cultivars, I think two or three, where the foliage initially is green, but it matures to kind of a dark reddish purple. It has white flowers in the spring. It typically produces the small cherry-like fruit later in the summer. Black knot is a disease. It is. It's very hard to actually correct because the typical recommendation is to go out and physically remove the affected branch, where you cut off the branch about 6 inches or so below the actual growth. And if you have a tree that has several of these in it, if you did that, there may not be much left of the tree if you did that. The other thing is, even if you do that, it could still reoccur or redevelop where you have new infections. So it's very, very hard to deal with. I typically suggest just leaving it as it is, just kind of ignoring it, because trying to prevent it is very, very difficult to do. And it's not going to kill the plant directly. It just looks very hideous, especially in the wintertime when you can see them.
Right.
Like burnt hot dogs on
yes,
a stick.
Or dog poop on a stick,
yeah.
yes.
To return to a theme of the hour.
Yes, poop.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Kristen. I have two west-facing strawberry plants that didn't bloom last summer. However, they did grow and expand very well. What sort of care do I need to provide for them this summer? This will be the third year they've been in the ground.
Strawberries. Basically, they should bloom. I'm not sure why they didn't. Just make sure they have water. I probably wouldn't fertilize much this spring. I would just let them go and make sure they have water. If it doesn't rain, they should be watered once a week. And if they don't bloom by, let's say, the end of June, maybe give them some fertilizer.
All right. Megan's on the line next in Mason City. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I recently sort of inherited a house in Mason City and had to remove our great big established trees due to bur oak blight. And so now it's a very wooded neighborhood and is considered a tree city USA. But my lot, which is 50 by 100 basically, has no trees left in it, so I'm going to get a lot more sun than I used to, but I'm worried about whether or not planting some new fruit trees, which I'm interested in doing, like permaculture or food forest kind of thing, now that I have more sun, but I'm worried about whether the other trees in the neighborhood that may have been infected would affect whatever I plant, whatever trees I decide to plant.
All right,
I didn't want to go with height, you know, but I'm just wondering what I can do in my yard, which gets mostly
all right,
southern.
We only have about 30 seconds to answer that question.
Well,
I'm sorry, Megan.
I would say that most plant diseases tend to be very plant specific. So something that may have killed, let's say, for example, an oak tree like oak wilt would not affect a maple tree or linden tree. So I don't think the fruit trees should be affected. Just make sure that when you plant these, that you select varieties hardy for your area, and make sure that you have the appropriate number for cross-pollination and fruit set if that's the case.
All right, Megan, thank you for your call. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Aaron Stile, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Enjoy the orchids. Manager of Public Programs at Ryman Gardens in Ames. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.